There is a great new book out that I think goes a long way in explaining many of the problems we face in American culture today. The book is Hoodwinked. The author is Jack Casher. We've had Jack on this show several times to talk about his investigative work in Flight 800, the flight that was blown up off Long Island in 1996, and that there's a great amount of controversy over. Jack is also an award-winning writer-producer. He is an executive director of a Midwest business magazine. He's written for The Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, Fortune Weekly Standard, WorldNet Daily, where he's a regular contributor. And his new book, Hoodwinked, is one I think you could profit by reading this summer. He joins us now. Jack, thanks so much for being with us.
Hey, Kirby, thanks a lot. You know, I remember my Seattle appearance as well, because you have such a knowing audience when it comes to talking about TWA Flight 800.
Well, we had a lot of Boeing people.
I know, and yeah. I haven't met the Boeing employee yet who doesn't agree with me on that subject.
Yeah.
And what intrigued me about this story is, like, the TWA Flight 800 story. There are so many incredible stories that are untold.
Absolutely. Oh, I agree. And as I read through your book, I realized that, you know, I know a lot of these stories just because of my interest in politics and involvement in my reading of history. But what you've done is really, I think, sewn together or stitched, if you will, a fabric that connects so many small stories that show a similar trend in American history and culture. And what Jack's book is about, really, is subtitled How Intellectual Hucksters Have Hijacked American Culture. And it talks about the phonies on the left, the Marxists, some of the Darwinists, and the environmentalists, the multiculturalists, and others, and then the stories behind them, and in a way that's easy to understand and recognize how it all comes together. And Jack, if we can, let's start out talking about what you referred to. One of the authors talks about the gap or the hole where communism has just kind of fallen through. I mean, communism fell apart. It fell in the late 80s and early 90s throughout Europe. And people don't want to talk about it, but for a long time, there was a class of Western intellectuals who advocated, believed in, and wanted communism, Marxism here in the West, and were sympathetic and actually lied in order to advance it, and nobody talks about him anymore.
Right. You know, Lenin, I mean, for Lenin, he said, I believe it was he who said, you know, tell a lie often enough, it becomes the truth. For the Marxists, truth was a joke. I mean, it's something they laughed about. I mean, that was for fools. That was for their useful idiots. They told whatever story was useful. And it's odd. It was Jason Blair who led me on the right track when I was writing this book. Jason Blair, if you remember, Kirby, is that bizarre New York Times reporter who imagined cows and Jessica Lynch's front lawn from his coked-up apartment in Brooklyn. Because everyone west of the Hudson has cows in their front lawn, don't they?
Right, yeah.
And but Jason, when Jason Blair was being pilloried, as he deserved to be, he said, he goes, I don't understand why my misdemeanors are considered the low point of the New York Times when they're still honoring people like Walter Duranty and Herbert Matthews. And I had heard of Duranty. I hadn't known that much about him. So in researching the book, I said, maybe this book shouldn't be about the Jason Blairs. It should be about the Walter Durantys.
Mm-hmm.
And Duranty was this guy. He was the New York Times reporter in Moscow in the 1930s, and he purposefully covered up the greatest Holocaust of the 20th century, that is the Ukrainian terror famine, in which Stalin went in and murdered roughly 7 million small farmers for resisting the collectivization of the farms. And with that knowledge suppressed, I mean, Duranty did a brilliant job of suppressing the whole story. He knew what was going on. As he said to his friends, hey, you know, you got to break a few eggs. You want to make an omelet.
Right.
Like 7 million of them.
And he got a Pulitzer Prize.
He won a Pulitzer Prize.
For his coverage from Russia when, in fact, he knew he was lying.
Yeah.
And recently, there was an attempt to have the Pulitzer Committee pull his Pulitzer on the basis of the fact that we all know now he was lying, and they refused to do so.
They refused to take back Alex Haley's Pulitzer Prize after... You know, and that's how I got into this story. I was in Ireland in 1993, listened to national radio one day, and I heard this guy from the Village Voice. Now, the Village Voice is, you know, left-wing progressive newspaper, who was a literary detective. And he went in on the trail of Alex Haley, the author of Roots, you know, which is treated reverentially in schools still.
Mm-hmm.
And he went in and he said, hey, listen, here's what I discovered. First of all, in 1978... Haley had to pay some white author $680,000 to get out of a plagiarism suit. And that got no coverage at the time. Not only that, what the story they missed, anyone who covered it at all, was that he plagiarized from a novel. Here he is, he gets a Pulitzer Prize for nonfiction, and he plagiarized from a novel. And then when Philip Nobile, the author, went back and traced the genealogy. It didn't work. It wasn't there. There was no Kunta Kinte. The whole thing was a setup. It was a fraud. Now, I came back tonight. I heard this guy. He was on for an hour on Irish National Radio, big station. A month later, I come back to the United States. I said to my friends, man, what about that Alex Haley story? And you know what they said to me?
They said, what Alex Haley story?
What Alex Haley story?
Yeah.
This came out of New York City, out of the Village Voice, which is a very high-profile New York newspaper, totally suppressed, even though it's a left-wing paper.
Yeah.
But the Soviet part was one big part of it. The whole sexual revolution was built on lies. The whole environmental movement, not the whole environmental movement, certainly the Rachel Carson.
Well, the doom and gloom part of the environmental movement was totally built on lies and distortions. And yet it seems like, I've often said that in the olden times, in biblical times, if you were a prophet who made a false prophecy, you got stoned. And in modern times, if you make a false prophecy, you wind up on the Today Show and write a second best-selling book, and you get honored by society.
Right. So you're Paul Ehrlich, and you predicted by 1999 that there'd be the average lifespan in the United States will be 40, and there'll be 20 million people left, and it doesn't come to pass. And then you just make up more predictions, and you get the equivalent, which you got just a few years ago, of the Nobel Prize for environmentalists.
And Ehrlich is a great example, because when I was in school, I started college in the early 70s, and Ehrlich's book, The Population Bomb, was the book.
The book.
And you read the book, it says by the mid-80s, America would be starving.
Right.
There'd be riots in the streets. We'd have to cut India loose because it couldn't keep up with its population. Life expectancy would be down. All these horrible things happening because of the population explosion. None of it came true, and yet he is still held in high esteem by the mainstream media, the establishment, and environmentalists. He just writes another book, and he's not called to account for all of his, false prophecies, if you
will. You know what made this, Kirby, what made this book interesting for me is because I don't like to just tell negative stories. I like to have heroes. And in every case, there's someone who came in and blew the whistle on the fraud.
Right.
And most of the time, these guys are from within that own community. A lot of them are leftists, who just had a conscience and said, I can't put up with this, like Nobile with the case of Roots. And Paul Ehrlich's case is a great story. Julian Simon, he's an economist. He's sort of a libertarian economist. And he's so sick of Ehrlich's nonsense about vanishing resources and dying populations that he challenges Ehrlich. He says, listen, you pick any four commodities, hold them for a decade, and based on your argument, their prices will go up because of the increasing scarcity.
Right.
I'll pay you the difference. But if he says if they go down, you pay me the difference. And he gave Ehrlich the opportunity to pick any four commodities he wanted out of a list of 35. Ehrlich took them up on the bet. All four of them, of course, plunged.
They
weren't getting more scarce. They were getting less scarce. And Ehrlich had to pay off. And his website now says, in retrospect, we think that bet was a mistake.
Yes. Let's talk for a minute, if we can, about Margaret Sanger.
Yeah, there's a case.
The founder of Planned Parenthood, who is held up by many as kind of a saint.
Yeah, it's incredible. And how they've done this, how they've managed to maintain her reputation, and this is where I talk about this often in the book, fraud being a collaborative adventure. I mean, you just can't be a fraud on your own. You need a publisher and agents. You need, reviewers and all that sort of stuff. Sanger wrote a book in 1922 called The Pivot of Civilization. The only people who keep the book alive today are her critics. The Pivot of Civilization makes the Nazi eugenics program look absolutely tame by comparison. I mean that literally true. In fact, Sanger thought that the Nazi plan of eugenics was too weak-kneed because the Nazis essentially believed that fit women should outbreed unfit women so there'd be more fit. Sanger wanted it both ways. As the mother of birth control, she invented that word. She didn't want to have any children particularly, so she thought that the way to maintain fit people in control of society was to forcibly sterilize the unfit. That's called negative eugenics. The Pivot of Civilization is written to that topic. Now, when the Nazi program became unpopular in the late 30s, Planned Parenthood, which Margaret Sanger started, and its allies, which were numerous, decided that they would have to bury that half of Margaret Sanger's history, and they've done so. So they talk about Margaret Sanger today as though she never wrote The Pivot of Civilization, which was her best-selling book in 1922. Hugely influential book, because in 1927, Supreme Court, that Oliver Wendell Holmes, all the other progressive stars of that court, Louis Brandeis, passed Buck versus Bell, which allowed states to forcibly sterilize people they thought were less than fit. And in Sanger's viewpoint, and this is the scary part, she based her notion of what a moron was, that's her word, on the draft physicals of 1917, 1918, First World War. And her view, 47% of the American population qualified as morons to be sterilized. So,
yeah.
And she's treated like
of course, she's caught. Yeah, of course, like she wasn't one, right? Yeah. I mean, the people that define these things are never under the definition. It's always everybody else.
Right. In her case, yeah, she was forthright in 1922. Now, when she wrote her autobiography in 1938, I mean, the handwriting was on the wall, and she started backtracking big time about her past. But, you know, she was 40 years old in 1920. It wasn't like she was some innocent, stupid kid.
Right.
I mean, you know, she was fully out there.
Well, I think once she saw public reaction to what the Nazis were doing, she had to pull back.
Yeah.
She really had any choice.
And yet she was kind of interesting in another way, too. She was so virulently anti-Catholic that she threatened in 1960 to leave the country if JFK were elected president. And at the time, that was a pretty novel threat among the intellectual elite.
Yeah, they keep making that threat, but somehow they never live up to it.
They never go.
We've got about a minute left. Let's talk real quickly, too, because you also deal with some current controversies like War Churchill.
Oh, Churchill is like my poster child. He couldn't have come along at a better time.
Yeah.
He's the guy at University of Colorado who claims he wrote a book called Notes from a Native Son. Well, at best, he's 128th Indian. Half of the audience that's listening to this is more Indian than War Churchill. And yet, he parlayed that into a full-blown career. He's the guy who called the survivors of the victims of 9/11, the little Eichmanns,
right?
And praised the gallant sacrifice of the terrorists. And after that, was promoted to be chair of his academic department at Colorado University. And the scary thing is, Kirby, is there's a Ward Churchill at every university in listening to
this.
That's
right, absolutely. Right, if not more than one, unfortunately.
And I think the nice thing about this book is it can arm college students. I mean, they don't have to read it, but they just have to have it.
Yeah.
So when they're talked about Margaret Mead or Margaret Sanger or Alfred Kinsey or Rachel Carson or Paul Ehrlich or Ward Churchill or Michael Moore, they have a reference.
Yeah. And I think it's important for parents to understand what their kids may be facing in public colleges as well. You know, when these are the people that influence the teaching of the people who are doing the teaching.
Right.
And your book is like almost like a mini encyclopedia of all the leftist loons that have tried to impact our culture and have impacted our culture.
Yeah.
And with references and sources so people can be readily prepared when these people are held up as saints, like Ehrlich and Sanger typically are on the college campuses.
And they're still taught even after they're exposed.
Yeah, that's right. They're exposed. It doesn't matter. Well,
doesn't
communism
matter.
Was exposed, and they just ignore it. They keep moving on. Alger Hiss was innocent.
Yeah, right.
And they keep going on chanting these mindless mantras and the antidotes in Jack's book. Now, the book is Hoodwinked, How Intellectual Hucksters Have Hijacked American Culture. Jack Cashill, the author. Nelson Corinth, the publisher. A good book to read over the summer going back to school, or just if you understand what's happening in American culture and why we're at this point where we have the significant culture war going on and who's arrayed on one side and what those of us who are sane are up against. Jack, listen, always a pleasure. Thank you for your work on Flight 800 and this book as well, and I hope we get a chance to cross paths again soon.
Hey, Kirby, thanks a lot. Anyone wants a signed copy, go to my website, Cashill.com.
Cashill.com, C-A-S-H-I-L-L, Cashill.com, and they'll sign it for you. Jack, thanks. Best of luck with the book.
Okay, take care, Kirby.
You bet. Have a great day. All right.